All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Week 5 edition of the show, as the Bucks come in 3-1 and get set to take on the Miami Dolphins at Raymond James Stadium. Old familiar, Sunday 1 o'clock kickoff, used to be all we ever got. This is the first one we've had this year, and there aren't many, especially in the early part of the year. But it will be a fun one, we hope, on Sunday afternoon. Of course, we've got that to get to today. We've got the Patriots game. The Bucks won last Sunday night, 19-17. We got that to get to. A bunch of other things around the NFL as well. So thank you for joining us. Thank you to the Joes for giving me this platform. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where if you want to check them out, the website's the best way to start, BillCurryFord.com. Remember, they spell it C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out all the inventory. They got cars, trucks, vans, brand new, pre-owned, all that stuff on the lot in person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They're there. They've been there for 60 years now. But again, go to the website first, check things out, and you can even have them bring it to your house and, you know, whatever it is you like, test drive it first. All these things they will do for you. You don't have to get out of your chair except to get in the car. And then if you want to go down there, I recommend seeing the lot because it's massive. The showroom's beautiful. They got a little coffee shop in there and everything. And there's something for everybody. Whether you're one of these high-end people that likes to go big, whether you'd like to keep it nice and simple and economical and go with something pre-owned and sensible, which is what I do, anything on that spectrum, it's all there at Bill Curry Ford. No matter what you buy, you get the nationwide unlimited lifetime powertrain warranty, so you can take that car back to the service center for as long as you still own it if you bought it at Bill Curry Ford, and you are covered. So thanks to them, and again, thanks to the Joes for letting me come on here every week. And it was a fun one this past week, as you know, a little bit of a late night. You know, these Sunday night games, I always get excited for them. We all do. It's prime time. It feels cool to have the Bucks be the ones everybody's talking about. This one in particular was a big deal because it was supposed to be, you know, one of the most watched regular season games of all time. And it did end up being up there. It didn't shatter the records or anything, but it was among the most watched regular season games ever. And it actually beat out several playoff games over the past few years. And there was a lot to recommend, you know, for the casual viewer. Of course, all of us, if you're listening to this show, we're going to watch it no matter what. But I thought it was a really good win. And, you know, the Bucks didn't look their best. The offense sputtered. There are criticisms, which we're going to get to and things like that. But, you know, those types of games in an NFL season that's now 17 games long, you know, you're not going to look great every week. But considering the situation the Bucks were in, especially with their defense and the secondary, and the defense stood up, and considering that now through four games, we're looking at a 3-1 football team. They've played four decent teams. The Falcons aren't that good, but you've got the Cowboys, the Patriots, and the Rams, and the Falcons. So those four teams together, to look back on the first, what used to be a quarter of the season, now it's a little less than a quarter of the season, and to say the Bucks were 3-1, I think is really good. Like, the Bucks are definitely in a good spot, at least in the standings, coming out of week four. On the injury front, you know, things continue to get a little bit dicey right now. But as we'll get into here on the show, I would rather have these things happening now than later in the season. But, you know, it's going to be tough. Like, it's always tough, no matter what. And the Bucs secondary, I mean, we know what they did in the Super Bowl and the playoffs, maybe more broadly. But it's not like they were world beaters and we had the best secondary of all time all last season. So even when they were completely healthy this year, you know, people just remember what happened in the Super Bowl, and that was an outstanding performance. Of course, pass rush had a ton to do with that and other factors. But, you know, everybody was kind of assigning the secondary to be this incredible strength now this coming season. This is before all the injuries. And, you know, that might have been a little bit too much, and especially now with the injuries we have, and another one mounted up on Sunday night with Carlton Davis tweaking his quad. You could see it right when it happened. When he laid on the ground, he pounded the ground. And you could tell it wasn't necessarily pain. He was pounding the ground in anger, the way that you see guys do when you can tell they kind of know they're going to be out for a while because of this. And he was just frustrated. And Bruce Arians has since said regarding Sean Murphy Bunting and Carlton Davis, his quote was, "Don't expect them back anytime soon." So what does anytime soon mean? Who knows? But it ain't going to be this week, it ain't going to be next week, and probably not the week after that at the minimum. And maybe after that we'll start getting some more words. So I want to give a big round of applause, first of all, to the secondary, because watching that game on Sunday night and then even seeing, you know, before Davis, but then when Davis went down, it's like, okay, well, we got Richard Sherman, who we just got 5 minutes ago, who hasn't played in a while, is getting older, and Pierre Desir are now our cornerbacks for the rest of this game, numbers one and two. And this was early in the game. It was like, what was it, second quarter, I think it was? So it wasn't like it was just for a few series. And I even posted on Twitter, like, the gif of Homer Simpson, like, pulling his collar, like, yee, this is going to be a little bit dicey. And the defense stood up, man. I mean, to me, we're going to talk about the end-of-game scenario. I don't want to go too hard on the games that already happened because, you know, we're always looking ahead on this show since it's later in the week. But when the Bucs were down 17-16 and they kicked the field goal to go up 19-17, which I thought they kind of were a little bit clumsy with the way they did that and they left too much time. But anyway, they got the field goal made, hats off to Suckup, and they did take that lead. But there was so much time left, and it didn't feel great. Like, I felt like at 19-17 with 2 minutes left in the Patriots having the ball, that even though we led, that New England was probably a favorite to win that game at that point. I was like, they're going to drive into field goal range. How often when you see these teams leave time like this, and even if it's less than 2 minutes, it's usually enough, but the full 2 minutes, I was like, how often do you see teams not get a good look, if not, you know, making the field goal, at least get a really good look at it? They're going to have a field goal attempt to beat us that's going to be pretty not cool, I was thinking at that point. And the Bucs defense at that point, I mean, to hold them to a 55 or 56 yard attempt in that weather. And this is where I questioned Bill Belichick, because I thought for sure when it was fourth and two, and again, it was, I think, a minute left. They had run off that point, so they had a minute left. It's fourth and two. The weather's terrible. It's pouring. It's not easy conditions to kick in. And even if he makes that, then he leaves the Bucs a minute to go back and get their field goal, which maybe they pull it off, maybe they don't. But I thought for sure Belichick would go for that fourth and two. And, you know, the old thing I always say, and this is something that is subjective, but you always want to do what the guys you're going up against are rooting for you not to do. So, in that case, as a Bucs fan, weren't you rooting for the Patriots to kick the field goal? Didn't you have a wave of relief wash over you when you realized he was kicking? Because I was scared to death he was going to go for it. They were going to get it, and then they were going to bleed that clock all the way down and make the field goal, the game-winning field goal, the final play of the game. So, when he sent them out, I was like, oh, okay, there's a chance he might miss this. Plus, even if he makes it, the game's not over yet. And then Nick Folk, to his credit, I thought, I mean, he hit a hell of a ball and gave it a ride and just hit the upright. And that's how fine the line is, folks. I mean, our whole discussion on this show today, my tone, my outlook on decisions that were made by the coaching staff, it's all totally different because of, like, what, like 3 inches? Like, if the ball goes 3 inches to the right, it still nicks the upright but probably goes in, you know? But since it was right dead center on the upright, it clanked. And like Al Michaels said, some doinks are better than others. You can perceive that however you want. But it really changes everything, because if that ball goes in, Bucs end up losing, then, you know, I'm probably ripping the Bucs today. Because here was my criticism, my one criticism. When they had the ball, and they got into Patriots territory, and they were in the 2.5-ish minute range at that point, clock was running. Patriots did have a couple timeouts, which they used to keep the Bucs from running down the clock. But if the Bucs had gotten another first down or two, it wouldn't have mattered. The Patriots would have had to use those timeouts, and the Bucs could have still kept running clock. In my opinion, what Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich should have been doing at that point was playing to make our game-winning field goal attempt the final play of the game. Like, it should have been the whole plan the whole time should have been, okay, we're going to get the ball, we're going to get it down to field goal range, we're going to keep running clock, make the Patriots use their timeouts by getting a couple first downs, and then we're going to kick the game-winning field goal with like 4 seconds left. And that's going to be it one way or the other. Maybe we'll miss, maybe not. But we're not going to leave them with the ball. So I was surprised when they went into the end zone twice to Antonio Brown. And Bruce Arians was asked about it, and he actually did address it in the one of the press conferences this week. And, you know, because again, they didn't have to do that. They could have just kept running clock. And those two incomplete passes allowed the Patriots to have more time. But Arians said, quote, "That was really hard. Those are a couple plays we have to make right there. I thought it was a great ball by Tom on third down. The play before AB puts a double move on and gets double hand jammed with no call," which is true. He did get hit way beyond 5 yards, and they didn't call it. But anyway, Arians said, okay, well, let's go right back at it because he's going to run by him again. And he did. We just didn't quite make the play to ice the game. And all that is true. You know, the one pass, you know, that didn't work the first time. The second one was right on Antonio Brown's hands. And it wasn't an easy catch, so I'm not going to call it like a flat-out drop because, you know, the defender was right there. And it wasn't like just this gimme touchdown. But that's the point. Like, even if you get that look and even if your guy gets the step on the guy, it's still hard to complete those. So Brown didn't come up with it. A touchdown would have made it an 8-point game, assuming they kicked the extra point and just make it an 8-point game. And then Patriots still would have had the ball with some time. But to me, and I know he almost caught the ball, again, I would have just tried to get that clock down, and kick that thing and walk off and not leave it a chance. But when they didn't do that, again, the Bucs defense, that was impressive, I thought. I mean, you know, we've been critical, rightfully so, but we got to say, you know, give credit where it's due because that was a really good job by them. And I'm surprised Belichick put his kicker in a position to have to kick a 55-yarder with the weather the way it was and things like that. I thought he would have been better off going for it on 4th-and-2. If they get it, they can get more yards, get even inside 50 yards, and probably beat us. But luckily, it worked out the way it did. The defense on that 3rd down made that stop to get the 4th-and-2, and that's what helped win the Bucs the game. So hats off to Richard Sherman. I mean, again, we got him 5 minutes ago on Sunday night, and he wasn't even on this show last week, he was saying, and I told you what he said. He's like, yeah, this week's going to be a little bit of a stretch. I'm probably going to need some more time. Probably going to need to work out a little bit, practice with the team. You know, maybe I'll just be in some spot. I mean, that's what he said. And then, like, a day later, all of a sudden, they're like, oh, you're going to play a little bit more than we thought. And then a day after that, plus the injuries happening, he played 58 of 59 defensive snaps. And look, these guys are professional athletes, okay? I'm not trying to, like, go overboard. I mean, you're expected to be able to do that. But again, advanced age, hasn't played in a while, just came to the team that week. So that was impressive. And he even said this week, he said, yeah, my legs kind of felt like jello. But other than that, it wasn't too bad. And, you know, he gave a good, he wasn't, you know, there was definitely times where you're like, oh, that was a little bit of a mistake, or he wasn't, you know, a step slow here or there. But played his ass off. Same with Desir. You know, none of us even know who that guy is. But he came in, did a great job. And as a whole, the defense got it done. The pass rush got a little bit more going, and that makes all the difference when you're trying to help out your secondary. So as far as the injury report this week, I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. Today's practice was earlier. If you're listening to this, you know, you might be listening to this Friday or Saturday or even Sunday. Things may have been different since then. But as of Thursday, Jamel Dean was on the practice field, so that's a good sign. Jason Pierre-Paul was on the practice field. He's got one of those big club things on his right hand, so in addition to the shoulder, something with the hand. But he was out there, so a good sign. Giovanni Bernard also practiced. You're not going to have Carlton Davis. Gronk's not going to be there. Antoine Winfield was still not there. He had his concussion thing, so that was a whole other thing. And I don't know with him, but he's probably not going to play. Pat O'Connor, who isn't as big of a name but plays an important role, not just depth for the defensive front but also on special teams, he missed practice Thursday. We'll have to wait and see on that. But like I said, really good win. Just, that was one of those games where this isn't like college football where, oh, we played a lesser-ranked team and we won, but we should have been better. Just go on the road, weather like that, all the outside stuff that was going on with Brady, get the dub and get the hell out of there. And they did it. They did it. So I give them all the credit for being 3-1. And it's going to help a little bit. Now the schedule eases up a bit. The next 8 opponents have started the season 11-21 combined. Bunch of 1-3 teams in there, some 2-2 teams in there. So hopefully the Bucs can feast on this and build up some wins. Carolina's not exactly going anywhere. They lost to Dallas over the weekend, so they're 3-1. They just picked up Stephon Gilmore from the Patriots. They couldn't work it out with him. He's a good, you know, multiple Pro Bowl corner. Pretty much exactly the type of guy that the Bucs need right now. And when he went on the waiver wire the other day, everybody immediately went nuts on Bucs Twitter, like, oh my God. And hey, sometimes people like just make up these fantasy scenarios in their head and they don't seem real. But that one, I was like, yeah, no, that, and the Bucs, I'm sure, would love to have been able to do it. Couldn't pull it off. And people say, well, you know, he ended up getting traded to the Panthers for a 6th-round pick. Because what happened was the Patriots announced they were going to waive him, but they didn't have to do it until like 4 o'clock that afternoon. So you put it out there, and then teams can come to you, and you can still do a trade, if, you know, beforehand, before he ever gets out there, and teams are incentivized to do that because then they don't have to negotiate against other teams for the pending free agent, basically. And Gilmore, you know, people say, oh, why aren't the Bucks? It's only a sixth-round pick the Panthers gave up. How can the Panthers get him for a sixth-round pick when we're so desperate we would have given a fifth or a fourth-round pick? Look, here's the cap. The Panthers have $19 million in cap space. The Bucks have $3 million. Gilmore and just coming over to be a rented dude this season, which maybe, yeah, the Bucks could have worked it out and fit him under their cap. There's going to be a new deal negotiated, and that's what Gilmore wants. A new deal is going to be renegotiated, and that's not something the Bucks were really in position compared to the Panthers, who have much more cap space, were able to do. So I guarantee the Bucks did their due diligence. I guarantee the Bucks would love to have someone like that in here, especially given their situation in the secondary. But it wasn't as simple as, ah, six-round pick, we're not doing that. It had nothing to do with that. That was just something, you know, to make the trade with. But the Bucks weren't in position that Carolina was to make that deal. So he goes to Carolina. They're beefing up. They're going for it. But I still think the Bucks are in really good position. And again, with the next eight opponents being a little less than formidable, we could say, then, you know, they're in a good spot at 3-1. And the loss last week to the Rams doesn't sting as much now. And lots of football left to be played. But I'm glad last week is over, to be quite honest with you, because, you know, it was cool again being on national TV. They even had the Today Show on Friday in Foxborough and all that stuff, and everybody talking about the Bucks. But it got to be a little much. And the whole thing, listen, you know I love Brady, and there's no denying what he's done, not just in his whole career, but even specifically just for the Bucks franchise in the short time he's been here. So I love him as much as everybody else, but it just gets a little much. Like, it's almost like this, like the picture in the paper on Friday, I think it was, or maybe it was Sunday morning or Wednesday. I don't remember what it was. If you still get the paper. I still get the paper delivered to my house. And they delivered on Wednesday and Sunday, a print edition. The rest is digital. So it must have been Wednesday or Sunday. Probably Wednesday. And there was a picture of somebody, like, in front of, like, downtown Boston. And this dude had, like, 30 goats with him. Like, actual goats. Like, the animals. And they all had Brady jerseys on. And I didn't even bother reading about it. But I just saw the picture. I'm like, okay, we get it. Like, Tom Brady's the GOAT. Everybody loves Brady. Think of the effort, the organization it takes to get 30 goats lined up, get jerseys fitted for them. You got to fit special jerseys, and maybe you can use the type of stuff they put on dogs, so maybe they didn't have to be custom made. But see, this is what I was thinking about. I actually thought about all this. Like, thinking about, okay, I'm so into this whole Tom Brady thing that I'm going to get goats, and I'm going to order little Patriots jerseys for all the goats with Tom Brady's number on them. And they have to fit a goat, so I can't just bulk order kids' jerseys because they got to have the legs different. So I'm thinking, like, okay, like, that's enough, you know? Like, that's too much. Like, it's getting weird now. It got weird. It's like this hagiographic type thing where, you know, it's an obsession, and I just thought the whole thing, I'm glad. I'm sure Brady will tell you the same thing. Like, I'm sure Brady will tell you he's glad it's over. And I thought the way that broadcast handled it and him and all, they, you know, it was fine. And Brady classed it up. You know, everybody talks about the hug they had with Belichick and Brady post-game on the field, but they actually did talk. It was reported they talked in the Bucks locker room. Like, Belichick walked over to the Bucks locker room, didn't tell anybody. Like, it wasn't like a planned thing. And other Bucks players were in there like, whoa. Like, Belichick just walked in and went over and talked to Brady. They ended up talking for like a half an hour or something like that. So, yeah, I'm sure there were a lot of things they both wanted to say. It was the first time they'd seen each other in person since he left. I know that when he left before, Brady and Belichick both said they had talked by phone when Brady told him he was going to Tampa Bay. So, you know, maybe there's some closure there now. Maybe all that stuff is unburdened, and now we can forget about all that and get ready for the Dolphins game on Sunday, which I'm a little concerned about, to be quite honest with you guys, and let me tell you why. And I'm not worried in the sense that I don't think the Bucs are going to win the game. But I think situationally it's a bad deal. I think it's a letdown spot just coming off of that game Sunday night. First of all, you played late Sunday, traveled late. It's not a short week, but it's a little short when you're the primetime team. And second of all, you're coming off that huge win in two straight road games, and there's just a lot of stuff, a lot of baggage and stuff that was going on. And so now you face a Dolphins team who's 1-3 coming off a loss. So here's a stat for you. And this is against the spread. This isn't straight up, okay? Bucks are a 9.5-point favorite against the Dolphins. But, you know, sometimes if you listen to this show, I'll tell you about situations. Like, there's certain times when there's situations that have historical precedence that teams find themselves in that either favor or don't favor them. We've got one this week that favors the Dolphins and does not favor the Bucks. 1-3 teams coming off a loss, historically, when playing against a different team coming off a win, so the Dolphins are a 1-3 team, they're coming off a loss, the Bucks are coming off a win. In that specific situation, 1-3 teams off a loss against a team coming off a win, the team that's 1-3 is 75-35-4 against the spread, historically. So, you know, that's, again, against the spread, which is 9.5. So I'm not saying the Dolphins are going to beat the Bucks. But I am not, you know, everybody's like, oh, okay, now we're going to cruise, Bucks. This could be a little bit closer than we're all thinking it might be, okay? Like, just, I'm just warning everyone. I hope I'm wrong. 75-35-4 means 35 times the better team covered anyway. But 1-3 teams off a loss tend to play better, and teams off a win, especially what the Bucks had to do this past Sunday with the way that whole thing went down and being on the road, it's a little bit of a letdown spot. So just beware of that. And it's something to keep an eye on as they face a Dolphins team that on paper you figure is a good spot for the Bucks, but maybe not as good as you thought until you realized all these other things that are at play. But weather should be good. It's supposed to be sunny on Sunday. It'll be warm but not crazy, something in the mid-80s. And for all the folks that want to go to a Bucks game and, you know, they sold out of season tickets so fast and, you know, you can't just buy a ticket now on the street with the way they do it with everything digital. But you can go online and buy. First of all, this one I think has a few tickets left if you want face value. But even so, tickets go for well below face value. Closer, if you go on Ticketmaster, which I don't condone Ticketmaster because I hate the way they do their fees and all the BS, you know, and the ticket costs, you know, $25 and then you click on it and your card, it says $41 and you're like, wait a minute, I thought it was $25. So what I always like to do, there's a little box you can check. It says show prices with fees. Because I don't care what the ticket price is. I care about the out-the-door price. But if you want to go to the Bucks game, this is a good chance to do it. Even the ones, like even the primetime game a few weeks ago, it got a lot less expensive the closer to game time. And this one being a Sunday 1 o'clock, you can probably go to this game for $20-$30 if you want to. So it's not like the average fan can't go anywhere near a Bucks game anymore. If you want to go, you can still go. And again, Sunday at 1 o'clock is what we've always been used to. As recently as like 3 seasons ago, I think the Bucks played 15 of their 16 games on Sunday at 1 o'clock. They only played 2 of their 8 home games at 1 o'clock on a Sunday this year. And there's something to be said for it. Again, it's comfortable. It's familiar. It reminds me of old school Bucks football. And so check the market out as we get closer to Sunday if you want to go to the game. It shouldn't be that bad. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. As far as what's going on around the rest of the NFL, I did want to say a quick piece on Urban Meyer. Just real quick, being a Gator and being someone who witnessed firsthand in person his tenure with the Gators, and now seeing what's going on in Jacksonville, they're 0-4. That part's not a surprise. They weren't going to get better overnight. But obviously, there's a ton of off-field controversy now. Meyer was filmed, you know, playing grab ass with some floozy or whatever you want to call it at some place when it was the night after. He didn't even fly home with the team from Cincinnati because he wanted to visit family. So they flew back without their head coach, and then this video comes out. All looks very bad, obviously. He's had to apologize. It's already looking like kind of a mistake that he was hired. Let me just say this. When I saw that, I mean, the Urban Meyer video in and of itself, when I saw it, I didn't think that much of it. And it doesn't mean I think it's okay or anything, but I mean, you know, stuff like that, I'm sure, has taken place countless dozens of times, and it's not on film. Maybe much, much more than just playing grab ass, I'm saying, with NFL head coaches or any prominent, powerful men in sports. I'm sure that's happened a bunch. I'm not about condoning or not condoning it. I just thought it was unremarkable. So, yet, given Urban Meyer's history, and given that, you know, nowadays we have everything on film, and we have Twitter, and we have all these reaction shows, you know, everyone's going to make a huge deal out of it. I mean, I'm not defending Urban Meyer at all. Just follow me on this for a second. But it is true that if the Jags, and you can't deny this, if they were 3-1 right now or 4-0, or maybe even if they were just 2-2, no one would care about this. But it's already going bad with the 0-4 start. Now people love to pile on. And again, Urban Meyer's had some issues in the past with leadership and judgment with the assistant coach at Ohio State that had the checkered past that he kept on. What we know now about that those teams at Florida in retrospect, which again, I stood and cheered my ass off for a few years, not knowing, you know, that Aaron Hernandez was shooting into car windows, stuff that other players in that team were up to. I mean, there was some stuff going on, and Herb looked the other way. And I've always sung the praises of him as a football coach, especially a college coach, because, I mean, as a Gator fan, the most fun I've ever had being a graduate of the University of Florida and a fan of the football team are those years that Meyer was here. And that was right at the time I met my girlfriend, who's now my wife, and she was in dental school at UF, and I had already graduated UF, but I got to go back and visit her. It was almost like having an extra 2 years of college, going up there on the weekends to football games. We went to Auburn, we went to LSU, we went to Tennessee, we'd go on the road. There was the 2006 season when they won the title, I think we went to like 9 of the 13 total games, like wherever, all over the place. And it was, I mean, I look back to this day, love those memories. We went out to Arizona for the title game against Ohio State, and we were blown away. Like, Herb was just ice cold, just had everything clocked. And, like, there's so few of those guys, like, when you need a head coach and you're thinking about, like, who can we get to put us where we really want to be? Like, not just some guy. Like, there's not many of them in college football. And Urban Meyer was immediately that guy when the Gators got him. You could see it immediately, the difference. And when he left, you could see immediately the difference again. So it's easy to get seduced by all that stuff. And as a guy, I know a lot of Gator fans that have hated him ever since he left. And I could never get there with that, just because I'm not someone who dismisses off-field stuff, okay, and just cares about winning football games. But yet I couldn't say, oh, Urban Meyer. I mean, he did more for UF football than anybody outside of Steve Spurrier, honestly. And I mean, as far as national championships, he did do more. But he doesn't seem suited. And it's still early. He could still save this somehow. He's still the head coach of the Jags. It's close. He almost wasn't, but he still is right now. But he seems unsuited to lead men who he doesn't have agency over. You know, like in college, you have agency over those guys. You know, those guys are not, I mean, not that they're peers in the NFL, but you're all grown men in the NFL, and they don't have to answer to you for everything. It's a job. Whereas in college football, he can just be the unquestioned, I'm the guy. I could say, pat your head and rub your stomach 30 times, and everyone's going to nod and say, oh, absolutely, Sir Urban, because I'm a god. You know, in college football, that's how it is. And it's not like that in the NFL. So it doesn't seem like he's suited for this. It doesn't seem like he's up for this. I could be wrong, you know, but he's always had, and you know, there's always been baggage with him. It's always been weird. When Florida won their third or second title in 3 years with Meyer, I was like, hell yes, dude. This is going to be another Bear Bryant. He's going to stay at UF for 20 years. This is how naive I was. He's going to stay at UF for 20, 30 years. We're going to win like 6 national championships. This is going to be like a legacy job, like a heritage job, like a generational job. And then like 2 years after he won the title, he's like, you know, acting like a complete maniac on the sideline, like just because we didn't convert a 3rd and 4 or something, and says he can't take it anymore, and he leaves. And I was like, okay. I guess that's the new way college football is. There's no more Bobby Bowdens. There's no more Joe Paternos, no more Bear Bryants. Saban, unfortunately for us, is trying to do that. He won't leave Alabama. But most of these guys are more transient than that now. But it does seem like he bit off more than he could chew. But I think the big difference is, and this is the difference now with college and pro that's getting better because of the NIL stuff with college and things like that. You know, these guys have a little bit more agency now. These guys have a little bit more independence. They have a little bit more say. And that's a good thing. You know, I think it's better this way than it was. But as far as Urban Meyer goes, you know, you have to be able to lead, not just X's and O's wise, but actually be someone. And there was rumors that the players, you know, after he did his apologies and, you know, things like that in the team meetings, that when he'd leave the room, they were laughing at him and stuff like that. And that's not quite substantiated. But the point is, you know, now knowing what I know, I mean, I used to be one of them. I used to fall into the trap. I used to think Herb was a god. And now I know better. But you know, ask any Gator fan, especially the ones that talk a lot of junk about Urban Meyer, if they want to give the two championship rings back and see what they say, because I sure as hell don't. I know what I know now, so I can look back now and take the high road and be like, oh, yep, don't condone that. But I got pictures hanging on my wall those times, that, you know, out in the desert, me and my wife at the Grand Canyon, me and my wife in South Florida at the other national title game, all smiles, all having fun. Great times. It's easy in hindsight to say, it was all... It wasn't all bad. It was pretty freaking good, actually. And I don't think it's going to be that way with the Jags, but you have to look at both sides of it. And again, this still, like everything else in sports, comes down to winning, because no one would care about it if Urban Meyer was 4-0 or 3-1 right now. They only care about it because he's already 0-4. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can reach me at BobbyGameDay anytime. Again, Bucks Dolphins is Sunday at 1 at Raymond James Stadium. We will be back next week to go over all that and more, and hopefully we're talking about another win, and we're talking about a 4-1 football team. But like I said, folks, be a little bit leery. I mean, it's just a spot. It's a better spot for the Dolphins, not as great a spot for the Bucks. Having a better team helps, of course, and that's at the end of the day what I think carries the day. But you know, I don't know if it's going to be as easy as a lot of people think it will be. But we'll talk about all that next week. In the meantime, thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to the Joes for giving me the platform to be on the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage. TV, internet, radio, no matter. And thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the show. Have a great weekend. Oh, didn't even mention the Rays. Game 1 tonight of the ALDS. I'm doing this on Thursday, but whenever you're watching or listening to this show, we're in the playoffs. We're in the sweet spot. It's a beautiful time of year. So go Rays. Lightning starting out too. Enjoy all the sports this weekend, especially the Bucks game on Sunday, and wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.